Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant, and I still loving you. I'm walking down
by our very own Jay Hatter, and we are a team of voices, and you can find us on allpoetry.com, brought to you by the AP Taylor. I guess he's not a foundation anymore. I don't know what happened, but there's some story behind that that I'll get to one of these days. This is a blog talk, and I am Raconteur, your host, and this is Off the Rack, and tonight we're talking about a Poe quote from an interview from, I think he would have been 214 on his birthday this January, so it's kind of old, but I just fell in love with it, and it's from an interview. There's a lot of stuff out there on Poe. Netflix has a wealth of miniseries and things like that are a lot of fun. One of them was a time in his life when he was, I think, a cadet in the military. He spent a year, well, it wasn't even a year, and then he got dishonorably discharged. It's called the Blue Eye, but it sounds really cool. And there's documentaries. Of course, they take advantage of the fact that he is who he is. I think it was called Buried Alive. I'm digging up the truth, so that one sounds really interesting. Also, There's a lot of questions about if he really was crazy or not, to the point that I think even in his obituary, the man who was supposed to be his friend, I think one of the people that promoted his writings, kind of maligned him in his own obituary. So that he's living with that. And, you know, I guess that's partly how he became the underdog. And, I mean, I'm a Poe fan. I've always loved his writing, crazy or not. The characters he came up with when he did his stories and his poetry, I mean, he was very relatable and very deep. And, you know, so that's kind of where this quote came from. And then the idea of insanity being his normal and, you know, his escape from reality. That brings to mind everything that has to do with, you know, your point of view on what's reality and what isn't. And, you know, anyways, so here we are. And we've already got people on the phone, and I've already spoken too much. So let me say hello to Pretty Bird, who's watching my studio tonight. And say hello to her dog, Evie.
That was not my dog because I was muted so that you couldn't hear my dog crunching on every water bottle she can find.
I'm sorry. She's guilty without being guilty. I'm sorry, Evie. I blamed you. But hello, Pretty Bird.
Hello. You have a full studio today.
Let's bring them in and get to it, because I know some people are on a time crunch and they want to read right away. I think Deb's on the phone. So
she is not on right now. There is Sky. Say hello. Hello.
Hello. It wasn't my dog because I don't have one. We all know whose dog it is.
We have Hatter.
I'm trying to pump for that dog.
Say hi, Hatter.
Poe is 213 years old. That's what he says, anyway.
13
go.
Or 14. Double check that math.
Let's see. It would be... Oh, I don't have the month. Oh.
January.
Who's counting?
January was his birthday.
1811.
Would have been his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. Anyways, he died a while ago and lived in a time that's a little different than today. But, you know, there's a lot of similarities, you know, hardships and everything else. And part of what he lived with, which is what led him to that quote, was, you know, the same thing things we all struggle with and look at, you know, finding beauty in pain. And his wife was passing away. I think he didn't sell the Raven until he left to sell it, and he came back to find that she had passed away. I think that's part of his history, which is unfortunate. And there's anecdotes about some bar owner he gave an IOU to, and on the back of the IOU was the Annabelle Lee poem. You know, the bartender was like, you know, this will never be worth anything. The name ain't worth something. I saw some story about it. But anyways, go seek out the documentaries. It's worth listening to. You know, it adds a lot of color to his writing and his background and who he was and, you know, the mystery of if he really was crazy or not, because you know what is that line about, you know, there's a fine line between insanity and genius. Anyways, so here we are. We Sky and Hatter and you, Pretty Bird,
and
how
Wayne?
You doing tonight? Wayne, when did you sneak in, Wayne?
Well, I'm waiting for my introduction. I was going to come dancing in.
How you doing, Wayne?
Doing fine. Hope you're all doing all right tonight. Glad to be here.
Nice to hear you.
Hey, I'm going to hear my voice too.
So it's always a pleasure when you show up.
I'm here.
Let's do it. Where is it? Kentucky?
Bluegrass.
I thought you were in Texas.
Go at Abby Steiner. He went, go Abby Steiner, huh?
I like the bluegrass, don't say.
Did he? Abby Steiner. Look her up.
He's from Bourbon Country. Anyways,
Bourbon is from Kentucky.
Yep.
Tennessee, Kentucky, you know, Arkansas, all the same.
And I think last time I mentioned Kentucky, he said, you know, Texas. He's like, we saved Texas. So.
There wouldn't be no Texas out of
You know why it's so windy in Kentucky?
So far off topic, it's not even. So let's circle back. Sweet, do you want to go first so that you have you can drop whenever you need to?
No, but I'll go like third.
Okay.
I've got like three more lines to write, so I'm not quite there.
Right. Okay. Did you finish yours, Hatter, or do we have to go to the studio? We got a couple of. Let's open with Titus Exchange. Instead, he who goes last shall go first. Let's start with Titus.
Okay. Somebody fetching it? Let me see.
Pretty Bird might be on mute.
Pretty Bird. We're live.
Did she fly the coop?
Pretty Bird never flies the coop. She's maybe being coached by a stranger for her feathers and her beauty.
I'm sure
she's
been
original. All right.
We were talking about how she first spoke a sailor before.
Hold on. Let me see what's going on with the bird. That's okay. I'll be there in a second. The bird is the word.
Bird is. Thank you, whoever did that.
You know, the bird is the word?
Yeah, that was for a band that sang it, and you know, that was an old song. Yeah. Bird is the word.
Sorry to be a pain in the butt. Block Talk keeps on kicking me out.
Okay.
I was rescuing you.
Yeah.
Blog
Talk keeps on kicking me out, and it's not letting me log back in as host. So I don't know if any of you have access to the studio to not let this episode end because it kicked me off and won't let me back in. I have to call on my actual phone, so it won't let me call through the studio. You know what? Let me hang up and try manually calling.
Yeah, so I think Sweet has to go before I do. And since I'm, like, going to be cooking for the next 2 hours, because this is what I decided is a good time, I can log in, because I think I'll be here longer than she is. You want me to do that?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, let me try to call in on my phone with the actual number and see if that works one time. And say hi to AP.
Okay.
I'll see you in 30 seconds.
Hi, everybody. I can try to call if you like, and because I can be around for a while.
Well, look at everybody going to be around for a while. But we can't have let's wait to see if Pretty Bird works because we can only have one host for the show. So
I know.
Let's wait for Pretty Bird to talk on back because we're not going to lose anything quite yet. By the way, Poet's birthday was the 19th of January, which is 10 days after the 9th of January, which was mine. So that's brilliant.
And he was 214, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's 214.
I think he was born in 1809. But I'm not certain 100%. So.
I know he died when he was 40. But that doesn't figure into this math.
Good Lord.
Only I could turn a poetry show into a math problem.
I know.
We've got a host, according to me.
I'm back.
We've got a host.
Yay!
That would be me with all the numbers and everything that it finally took through my phone, because obviously my computer does not, you know, mesh well with Blog Talk because it keeps on kicking me off. So hopefully it'll keep me, you know, attached to my actual phone.
Thank you, Pretty Bird. So let's give everyone a couple of seconds and play Titus first.
All right. He is on the board. And here we go.
Hypnagogia. From firstborn, the devil's anguish. Having suffered in silence many years, happenings I did not know were lurking, in which case this curse of mine appears. 'Tis often to mislead, and yet still working beyond dreams, where my frustrations are kept. It seems where there is anguish I bestow wishful thinking, as a matter of fact then incrept this confrontation with the devil. Though from younger days the genie shone through me, friendlier than before with this little boy, but now awake I knew it had to be. He promised to abide, create, destroy, until awake it was asleep so deep, the words that duly fear will want to keep. Hypnagogia, a chant I call it. Since when did 666 need demonstrate the devil's anguish with a brace and bit? The abacus to which this blessed date, 6 minutes past the hourly sixth, reckons the devil himself would have raised me up. Within that count in total, 6 seconds, long enough for plead or where he will sup. Truth of the matter, those tiny devils inwardly destruct our blessed freedoms, but always seems to get in the way evil spreads, to take account the many demons who in so doing keep me awake all night, until there is a piece like this he'll write.
Gorgeous. There's a quote that kind of reminds me of, and I can't stand that I don't remember it word for word. It has to do with writing until there is no more words or something like that, and being not being able to sleep. Oh, and I believe it was a Poe quote too. That's going to kill me now. I'm going to have to go find it later and use it as another topic. Oh man. Let me get you some comments, Titus. That thank you for bringing that. It was gorgeous as usual. Love the music and the idea of bringing the devil into it. Because you know that the parallel thought that, you know, the devil's in the details, and you know the idea of going crazy and involving the devil. You know, I love that feeling. It's just so suitable and so perfect. AP, what'd you think?
Well, I have to say firstly that I did not know that hypnagogia is the transition between wakefulness and sleep. And so it's common to have hallucinations or muscle jerks or sleep paralysis or a whole heap of different things. And so it's absolutely spot on the topic in terms of you know, that time as to whether or not you're sane or not. And here is a time when clearly that is disrupted. And I think he, or as always, he finds a way to be able to craft his words very effectively to explain that dichotomy. Very well written.
Beautiful comment. Thank you. And Sweet, can you comment for Titus? You have to do it off of mute, though.
I know.
Oh, my world. I have to figure out how to do this. All right.
Hello?
the different lines in this. In which case this curse of mine appears too often to mislead, yet still working. Beyond dreams where my frustrations are kept. I like beyond dreams where my frustrations are kept.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I have that much patience. I never have. My frustrations are like right in front of my dreams, which is why I can't follow through with my dreams. So maybe if they were behind in my dreams, I might actually get things done. So I like that. Friendlier than before, this nice little boy, but now awake I knew it had to be. He promised to abide, create, and destroy, which I'm a girl, but that is me in a nutshell. I'm very much a very nice person, hence Sweet Pea, but nobody knows what P stands for because it could be protagonist, petulant, many other things. The words my duty fear will want to keep. Since when did 666 need demonstrate? I think that's something across cultures everyone knows. I don't know why, but, you know.
Yeah.
The abacus to which this blessed state, 6 minutes past the holy hour, six, reckons. I love abacus. So that visual, that's such great imagery. Long enough to plead aware he will suck. Truth of the matter when tiny doubles. I love that too. But again, Titus, your imagery is brilliant. This is brilliant. It just speaks so many different ways. It's dichotomy. It's got so many ins and outs of it, the black and whites of it. I really enjoy it. And oddly enough, in my own special way, I get it. So, brilliantly done.
Awesome. And Wayne, can you comment for Titus?
Well, I guess I can. This is a poet in prose form to the T. Spooky has a great narrative, and he does his voice to the time period. He kind of changed his voice for this one. It's kind of magical. And I like the line he had in there, until the awake it was, in sleep so deep, the words of duty fear were wont to keep. It's kind of, he gets kind of serious in the first of it, and then talk about it, and then at the end of it, he comes through with truth of the matter, why teeny devils inwardly destruct our blessed dream and freedoms. You know, he explains all the way through it, and he's got a great voice. And I like this whole lot. He did a good job with it.
Too early to comment, Sky?
No, I'm good. Thank you. Yeah, this is wonderful. And I really liked, I have to say, the 666 thing, I really kind of liked how you put that darkness in there. That I liked the idea when he starts talking about the chanting, the expression, the way that he kind of, you know, Poe has a wonderful way of using grammar. And to accentuate different words and punctuation. And I think that gives a lot to, you know, the type of performance poetry that this kind of falls into, for me anyway. That's, you know, the way that I see it. And I think he did that well. And then, of course, the whole story behind it. Excellent piece.
Excellent comment. Thanks, Guy. Hatter.
Unmuted. I'm a bit confused. Is it the state of mind that you would be in when you sleepwalk?
It's the in-between state he's entitled. I mean, there's a lot of layers to it.
Yeah.
I would say no, because sleepwalking, you're still sleeping. And this is that kind of mix of realms where you're not really awake, but you're not really asleep. So you're kind of in that, like, dual incorporated state of mind where there's no filter and things are really, really strange but feel really, really real.
Interesting.
It's a beautiful word.
Yeah, Tice did a good job. I think this is one of his best. At least I can relate to it. he explained it very well, as you did, Brack. The devil himself would have raised me up.
Yeah.
It took 6 seconds. Something about this, I like it. He always classes the place up.
And speaking of class, Pretty Bird, you get the last word.
So his author's note says that he does, in fact, suffer from this and since a young age. And for the past 12 years, he's found it a blessing since it helps him to write without waking up entirely, such as the surprise when he wakes up from his trance. It seems a worthy try. And I think that as a depiction between between places where it kind of gives birth to whatever is on your mind or that you don't want to think about during the day in those moments of quiet where it goes from dreams you can't remember to being somewhat aware of your surroundings. And, you know, I think that
yeah.
he does a wonderful job of making this akin to the devil's hand, because what comes up when he writes is apparently not things that he would normally write on fully awake and lucid and whatnot. And how wonderful is that, like to see these other sides of yourself or the other way or the way your mind would put things together completely unfiltered and untethered to conformity. I find that fascinating, and he did a wonderful job of making it feel all slightly sinister and ethereal, and I love that. So I think it's fabulous.
Yeah, it's an amazing piece. I got to try and figure out how to get to the Kevin's picks. That's great. Thank you, Titus. Are you in a time crunch AP or no? You see, you just waiting.
I'm just waiting for a phone call, Brack, and so when that happens, I will disappear and meet the delivery people with my new kettle and toaster. That's what I'm doing. I'm sitting here waiting for my new kettle and toaster to be delivered. And they're very funky.
And they're beautiful.
And blue. And Italian.
Oh.
They're very retro and fabulous.
Did the pot call the kettle blue? Anyway.
Yes. Pale blue. Sky blue. Yes.
Sky blue?
Yes. Sky blue.
That's not a phrase we use around here. Anyway.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So on Sunday, maybe, who we got up next? Wayne, did you want to go next?
Hatter's
on the board. No, Hatter put you on the board.
That's what I mean. Oh, you put me? Sorry. Okay, well, there you go. Okay, so, I was thinking about your topic, right? I was. And then I was in the car, and they played Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody. Enough said. Using on Bohemian Rhapsody, and it goes a bit like this: within insanity do we find reality, or instead does fantasy better agree to swirl the clouds and sympathy in shrouds within high upon lows by degree? Winds they swirl at the start of life, whether we choose the path of strife. Some may shun the trigger from a gun, others feel the sharp edge of a knife. While, we ask of our Scaramouche, a poor boy mired by Galileo's truth, or maybe hero is needed to grow beyond doubts and craze of youth. Or instead, is Beelzebub there aside, nothing really matters, though tide goes to show, we will never let you go, and I'm not sure it's true. Or an aside. End poem.
That was brilliant. Oh, my God. Yeah, I had to bite my tongue. Holy crap. That was great. I mean, the existence of that meme that's out there, you totally brought it completely to life, and now it deserves to be like a gift with the crows singing all of that. I mean, really, that's fabulous. That really was. you did an excellent, an amazing job with the lyrics, and you know, the only thing missing is I don't know if it's in your key, but
that was really cool. Oh, that's pretty. I wouldn't even start, Rack. He's Bruce.
Yeah, he had a beautiful Freddie Mercury. Anyways, Hatter, let's start with you. What'd you think of Just a Po' Boy?
I liked the way you constructed it. It was very familiar, AP. I think this is one of your better ones, to tell you the truth. You read it beautifully. The cadence was perfect. Going on a list.
That was amazing. It really was very cool. What'd you think, Sweet?
Well, to be honest with you, I love this for many reasons. The first stanza alone is it almost sounds like a riddle or a something, believe it or not, I think the Mad Hatter would say. It's something that's nonsensical but says something brilliant. With insanity, do we find reality, or instead, does fantasy better agree? Twirl the clouds of sympathy and shrouds with highs upon lows by degree. I have loved that. That could be an entire simple poem and done. I just think that's, I mean, that's great. And then, of course, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, Beelzebub, well, that's a great word. Anybody that uses it to, you know, put a hat on your head and pat yourself on the back. Nothing really matters, so confide. It goes to show you we will never let you go, and I'm not sure it's truth or an aside. Because who knows what the truth is? You know, that's perception. You know, I can tell you that, as our former president said, once, I'm sorry, can you give me the definition of is? I just think this says a lot. And bravo, Mr. AP.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
How did you like it, Wayne?
Well, I said, I saw that Beelzebub there inside. He had the fireball that needs to grow. But the winds did swirl at the start of life. This is my brain. It was perfect there. And a bit of it. Great, great point. I love it.
Thank you.
I thought it was wonderfully done. And, you know, it's kind of funny, too, because it reminded me in art class today, the art teacher had said, you know, great genius is always linked to a little bit of insanity. So when you think about the idea of that, and you start naming, you know, people of that are within our history that we deem with high esteem, and you start thinking about the little bit of madness that each one of them had, and you put that in there, and do we really break out of those cycles? You know, I think it's really interesting, and perspective that you brought in, and really well done. And I loved the poor boy. By the way, that was really.
Anyway, Pretty Bird.
Yes. Okay, first of all, being a person who has lost her muse for quite some time, I find it fabulous that you can be listening to a song and come up with something that is wonderfully inspired. And that opening line is fabulous. Within insanity, do we find reality? That is something to ponder, like, for eons, because, I mean, insanity is fluid and defined by how we define normal, but there is no normal because it's always changing. So what exactly is insanity to begin with?
Yeah.
And, you know, and everybody has a different reality, so there is that. So I love how you kind of start off with a bang and then take us through the rest of it. It's absolutely wonderfully inspired. And when creativity begets creativity. I find it to be a magical, magical thing. So this is a joy as always, AP.
Thank you very much.
You're a magician, AP.
Very, very welcome.
That was awesome.
Well, I am hoping to be the proud owner of the pale blue Italian kitchen equipment shortly, Rex. So I'm heading off to accept said courier of stuff.
I am loving your kitchen equipment with their little Bali squishy knobs. I am in love with them.
Thanks.
Oh,
well, I have outfitted new, you see. I've got brand new blue bowls and this lovely heavy sort of double metal spoonage and stuff. And it's all pretty.
Now, did you say bowls?
And double metal spoons.
That's not what it sounds like over here.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Bowls is not what I heard.
Oh, we need a Sunday. We so need a Sunday.
I'm saying,
so
you're going there. I'm not even there. You're going there.
I learned how to make dessert in Sunday school. Anyway.
I'm just a poor boy from a poor family sparing his life for his monstrosity. Bye, everybody.
Thank you, AP.
Bye. Enjoy your new equipment.
Later, AP.
Thank you very much. Bye, guys.
Me too.
Thank you very much.
So I put Wayne on the board.
I'm sorry,
so
who?
I put Wayne up. Wayne, because you were going to put Wayne up before AP was up, so I put Wayne up. And it has a SoundCloud. Did you want to read it, or do you want us to play it, Wayne?
Yeah, I want you to play the SoundCloud, but this is about if your job gets too serious and you take it too serious and you just lose control, sometimes you forget where you're at and you don't know what's going on. This is my version of that. So hit the button.
So,
all right, then.
Sounds crazy to me.
Here we go.
We'll see.
This is a call. I think we need a meeting. The answers are what they're looking for. Gave him the answers. They want more. That's what they want. They want my answers. They eat answers. I believe they're cancers. I don't get to sleep. Look at the sleep they had. They say I'm mad. They say I'm mad. I am mad. Why can't I leave? I won't hurt myself. Again. Remember my friend? Yeah, I have to pretend. Here comes Buddy. He knows where I'm supposed to be. Buddy doesn't want answers. Sit there for me. I'm glad they worry about me. I have a guard. He's been taking care of me since he was hired. He's a good guy. Kind of serious. Doesn't smile much. Always tell me to do this or do that. And don't ever touch. Buddy, can I? He's not listening. I think he's mad. Did I tell you? I think it's the best job I ever had. I was mad. All the time, I was mad at my old job. Had to work hard. Had to be careful. Had to be a snob. Now I don't get mad. Well, sometimes I get mad a little bit. They don't say much. They think I might quit. Oh, great. It's time for my cookies and daily shot. Well, I'll also take some pills. I forgot. Hey, I told you I don't have the answers yet. Yeah, you put that clipboard away, I'll bet. Ian?
Oh, wow.
I had sweet cookies and pills.
Not for my thrill.
I'm going to go raid the break room. That was very enjoyable, Wayne. Go ahead, Sweet. Give him a comment.
Well, you know, unfortunately, there's so much truth to that we push people into insanity instead of creativity. We push them into 12-hour days and no breaks and no vacations. And, you know, it's just to that point where you push them out of creativity and working as groups and solving problems into this is your box, and this is what you're going to do, and this is the answer now. Repeat, 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 until their little rats have gone insane. And then we put them in another box where we fill their pills for anxiety and all kinds of stuff. And then when that's done, we just put them in another little box, and here's your shot, here's your drink, here's your cocaine. I'm sorry, why did you fail again? I really find this poem profound. I really do. As hilarious as you put it, it's absolutely profound. Very, very insightful.
Thank you very much. That's what I wanted to be.
Excellent comment, too. I thought business manager would have been the best. Awesome.
They always their kid work in a crazy house. They go, I ask you all these questions. So he, you know, he does his work. He's just answering questions. He thinks it's his job, but he only knows that he thinks it's work. He kind of lost it.
I'm not crazy. I'm just a little unwell. Sky, can you comment for Wayne?
Yeah, and may I say, I just love that you went straight to the HR lady. And the HR lady has something to say about this. I love how your poem is like a fine line between how you read it and insane asylum and work. What are we reading about? Like, what are we talking about? Oh, they're the same thing. What was that movie? 12 Monkeys? Is that what it was? I don't know what that sounded like.
That's the dog.
That you all are hearing my Evie? That's not embarrassing.
Oh my God. It's the asthma.
She's getting up. Yeah,
that's my brachycephalic mole dog who snorts her way through life.
I just love that.
She sounds like a gargoyle.
I absolutely love it.
And
my
she encourages it by
scratching
behind her ear.
I feel that. I feel that breathing. No, I thought this was so great, and I really do. I have to say, I really love the dance that you do between, you know, working and insanity, and it's kind of like, in a lot of things, you're underpaid, you're overworked, you know, you're underappreciated a lot of the time, and it's kind of like, what are we doing right now? And a lot of people are, you know, what is that, foot to mouth or hand to foot or something or whatever, and just living check by check and trying to get by here. And I thought it was quite brilliant, really, really well done.
Thank you very much.
Hatter wearing too many hats tonight. Hatter.
Unmuted. Yeah, it's like a hard hat and a clipboard. That was $450 an hour. Yeah, I like it when you slow it down, Wayne, and give us a chance to take it in, what you're trying to say. And I agree with, was it Sweet that said it was profound?
Yeah.
Nice job.
Wow, that's great. Great hitter. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Pretty bird.
Well, let's say hello to Deb. Hey, Deb.
Hello.
Fly away.
Hello. So, Wayne, I don't know where you found that guitar version of Hey Jude, but it's fabulous, and you need to just, like, message me the link to that because it's awesome.
Okay,
I love how this is what anxiety – this is, like, the birth of anxiety, you know? This is, like, you have to go to work because you need money to live your life, but your job, well, apparently it gives you cancer because they ask you too many questions and it knocks up in your gut like ulcers, and they, you know, they just want more and more and more and more and more, and there's no kindness, there's no nothing. They like only pass by to ask you a question, and they may stay or not stay to hear the answer because I don't think they really care anyway, but they have to ask the question to check it off their list of crap to do. And I absolutely love that very fine and very blurred line between having lost one's mind and calling that a job. So I absolutely love this. This is just wonderful.
Thank you. Great comment.
And I think Deb has to read and run, so we could put her on the board.
I'm refreshing my thing. I don't see a poem from you, Deb.
I have my poem.
Should be there.
Mine's under Titus. Go get it.
Titus. Oh, there it is. I see it.
Okay. Titus.
Okay, you are on the board.
This microphone is yours.
There it is. My computer's in slow motion. At first I couldn't even get in because I couldn't get all poetry to load. But it's here. So I've
never had a problem getting loaded before, Deb.
I haven't been loaded in years. Just saying. I just don't... History. There it is. I don't know.
So much.
I do have... My goodness. Okay. This is called Sanity is a Card Trick with Marked Cards. And here we go. As darkness hovers like shrouds on the sky, silence is the plague that infiltrates my brain. Then it lingers inside and spreads around. It penetrates the lobes and drives me insane. In the insanity, the walls shrink, boxing me in, trapping me in like an inmate in a prison cell. Claustrophobia wraps me up in its tight grip. Now the squeeze hits like a trip down to hell. But my sanity's not a walk in the park for me. You play with my emotions like a fiddler. You yank the strings like a master puppeteer, playing me like hands of cards in strip poker, just to peel the layers of my sanity like the clothes, till days blend into the nights. And the night's bar and poem.
Wow. I really like that. The thing in the cards, that's a lovely image to combine with the rest of the imagery that you're using. But that always speaks to me. And then you've got the night waking up, and it's really a cool piece, Deb. I like that a lot. Sweet, can you comment for Deb?
Thank you, Akintour.
Amadeus, can you comment for Deb?
Hold on. Amadeus is actually sound asleep. He's had a bad day. he's on some painkillers today, and he's under the bed. So I don't know if he'll be joining us tonight. There you go.
I'm going to do that dog CPR.
That's just her normal state of being because the poor thing has a trachea the size of a kitten.
This poor thing. I like, but my sanity is not a walk in the park for me as you play my emotions like a fiddler. I think that goes a long way. That poor puppy. You yank my strings like a master puppeteer, playing me like cards with strip poker. I think the way you present this is a lot of how your heart plays a lot with your mind and your insanity, and it's very true. I think that, as always, it's very poetically done, but it brings, you have such a sense of sadness in here and a sense of wanting and a sense of where there's a mixture of sane and insane every time you love. I think that you pull that off. It's that love is never sane or insane. It's always the pattern of both. And that's why I really like this poem.
Thank you, my sweet.
It kind of hints at a different quote to me, and I don't know the source of your insanity, if it has to do with children or not, but the question I heard was, insanity is hereditary, you get it from the kid. So, anyway, Hatter, can you comment for Deb?
Surely. Yeah, I like the deck of... a marked deck of cards, playing strip poker or layers, peel off.
The game is rigged.
It is rigged. I don't know what a marked deck of cards is going to do you when you're playing strip poker, but it's a good thought.
You don't know what it'll do. It'll help you cheat so you can get the other person naked. That's what it'll help you do. Just saying.
Where do we sign up for this? You're welcome.
Hey, Wayne, can you come in for Debs?
Well, yes, I can. I said, this is wonderful from the beginning. I like the way it started out. And I said, silence is the place that infiltrates my brain. Then it lingers inside and spreads around. It penetrates the lobes and drives me insane. I said, that's great right there. That's a solitaire. It's a great line. And I also remember when I got penetrated in lobes. It was it hurt pretty bad. But now it's like being penetrated in lobes. It's a great appointment. You did well, and I enjoyed it a whole lot. Good job.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
And Sky.
Yeah, I thought this was a brilliant poem. You know, I like it too because I know that you talk about insanity. But I think there's so many parallels in here. And I think that we all have a little touch of that insanity, right? You think about anxiety on all different levels. And it could be, you know, somebody can say, oh, that's you're acting kind of insane, but triggered by anxiety, claustrophobia, all these things. Like, I look at my mom, you know, she's my godmother, the one who raised me, she's the most stable person I've ever known and the most practical person. But, you know, they tried to put her in an MRI machine. She's running down the hospital with her butt hanging out the gurney, you know, because she's severely claustrophobic, you know. And this is like a woman who's just so grounded, and, you know, and I bet some people are like, that lady's kind of insane. And that was an insane thing to do. But so I think that on so many levels you can think about all these things, you know, on, you know, quote-unquote, what is insane, and how it can present itself in different ways, like anxiety or having a phobia, and all these things. So that's what it made me – that's kind of what made me think of it. And the idea of a puppeteer and having the strings of the you know, a puppet with a – hold on, what did you say? You yank my strings like a master and puppeteer. When you have those things, you have no control. You have no control when your body takes over and it's just like – an innate reaction, and you literally have you feel like you have no choice in what you're doing. You just react, and it's hard to regain control of yourself. And that's what all these things, it kind of reminds me of and made me think about. So really well done.
Thank you very much, Sky.
Thank you.
Good.
You know, for some of us, it's the only moment you have alone or when you're supposed to be trying to sleep. And it's when all the snake hisses and little things you didn't have a chance to think of during the day come as bright as rainbows in the mid-afternoon sun showers. It's keeping you awake because it's all that you hear. It's all that you see. All the coulda, woulda, shouldas, all the things that you have to then extrapolate in your mind 15,000 times over to try to make sure you're understanding it right, because did I really hear that? Is that really what that was supposed to be? Or is that just how I took this? And all like just and then that leads to the time before and the time before and the time before. Next thing you know, it's 2 hours till sunrise and you haven't slept a wink. And it makes you feel crazy. It's all the anxiety. It's all the stress. It's all the
It's everything but the joy, because joy doesn't find us in the pit of night when we're trying to sleep. That's left for some other time. It hides in deep recesses, never to be seen again until, you know, you least expect it. But in the time when the earth is quiet and the lights are off and you are meant to relax, the more you try to relax, the more your mind hates you. And I know that place very, very well, and you did a really good job explaining it.
Ellie, I'm mad.
But thanks so much.
Who's okay. Thinking, did Hallo bring anything tonight?
Sweet.
He dropped it, right?
Sweet.
I sure did.
Sweet. I have to go. We have.
Okay, so.
She has to go.
We also have a recording from Jay and a poem from Pee-wee, too, in addition to who's on the phone. So, Sweet, I will put you up right now.
I'm sorry.
Don't apologize.
I'm fine. You're on the board.
I tried to get you read earlier.
I didn't read earlier. Yeah. I have to go straight from the fingers, unfortunately.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Talk to me in the darkness of my insanity. I smell the moisture of the soil being shoveled upon his coffin, bracing to the sound of the thudding kerplunk ringing in my ears. When I wake from my summertime slumber into the land of morning realities, facing the world in fits of sanity, gathering thoughts in gray matter clouds. Thunderclaps provide a reawakening of yesterday. Fear fights me in shadow box rages, hiding behind the sun and smiles of the friendly. Watching and waiting for the skies to choke out the ramblings of the genius. Fakers of the pen shouting, tell your tale of poison and sigh. Give us the headlines to make them scream. Exhaustion and living, breathing in normal, aesthetic human design. Dark, sweet darkness, envelope me in extremes. The wind blows, the rocking chair creaks. My favorite tune is humming. And there you are, singing me back to sleep and home.
Wow. You managed to get that idea of the earworm, that the song that gets in your head, and combine that with the a bit of the crazy. I love that. This guy's so many little subtle touches that you know, I want to say you're becoming infamous for, because, you know, you always put something on the table that looks, you know, pretty and inviting and everything, and then when you start to dig into it, you're like, wait a second. I see what you did there. Oh, man. this is great. This is really great. Let me start with Pretty Bird for a change. What'd you think?
I love this. This is very painful to me. It is with the coffin and all of that. If it is somebody else's coffin, it's the aftermath of what that looks like, of trying to face the world with that one tiny change that doesn't make a difference to anybody else but you, where your world changes and nothing is the same and it's all fake smiles and sunshine and rainbows, but it's all gray skies and thunderstorms but behind those eyes that nobody notices. And I absolutely love this. My favorite line in this is, fear fights me and shadow box rages, hiding behind the sun and smiles of the friendly. And there's that, and there is that, you know, trying to find that new normal, trying to figure out all the things you don't want to, that you never thought you'd have to figure out. You know, there's nothing quite as frightening as the unknown and things that you didn't ever want to face or didn't want to have to face. And this is just painful. You know, exhaustion in living, you know, breathing in normal, a pathetic human design. You know what? That is true. That is just true as true can be. Sweet darkness envelop me in extremes. You know, sometimes people need a little Xanax just to get through it. I'm just saying. So I love this. I do.
Yeah. I think you captured, well, what I think Poe did so brilliantly is the fear. I think, anyways, great comment, Pretty Bird. Thank you. Haddock, can you comment for
Yeah, very Poe-ish. You had you almost went the sweet pea darkness, but then you pulled it back a little bit. I like how you started it, smell the moisture of the soil. It's a great first line.
Yeah.
You're already there. Yeah, very good.
Thank you.
She got dirty. Wayne.
He's not here, I don't think.
Is Death Drop too?
No, Death Drop. Wayne's there.
I was going to wait until Sweet read first, and Wayne said he'd be back in 10 minutes. But yeah,
okay.
Sweet. You know how sometimes you read someone's poem and you think, whoa, and then you get to the next part and you out-whoa the last one. And by the time you got to the last, I couldn't pick a favorite part because you gave me the chills so many different times through this. From the very first line down to the last, it was like, and I agree with Hatter, it's very Poe-ish. You got to call this like double-faced brilliant. Wow.
Thank you.
I love and respect everyone. I'm out of here.
Bye.
Do you want to announce that before you run?
Yes, sir.
Any announcements?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were asking me. Where are we? I believe we're off tomorrow, and then Sweet might want to talk about Friday. Is somebody, I saw somebody in the magic show.
No, that's my dog.
Anyways, on Friday night at 10, it's Open Poetry with Liquid Damage. On Saturday at 9, it's AP and Hatter and myself, and Hatter's topic is Growing Old with Humor. And then on Monday, on 9/11, is my big first responder show. So that's at 10 p.m. That's been a few days, sir.
Thank
you. Great topic, by the way.
Thank you, Deb.
Night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, Deb.
Night.
Guys, you didn't get a chance to comment. Did you want to
Oh, no. No, I didn't. Hold on, because I put it away because you didn't call on me. And I thought this was an excellent piece, and I really loved the ending. The wind blows, rocking chair creaks, my favorite tune is humming, and there you are, back to sleep. I just really, I don't know, I just love the subtle moment that she brings in at the very end. No, we're not, hold on.
No, you're absolutely
piece.
Right. I said
no,
that,
right,
but
not,
I'm not sweet. You're right. I just let Deb go, so I'm like, Deb, I got Deb on the brain, and it was Sweet's poem. You're absolutely right.
Okay, good. Wow. You can say that anytime you want. That's so good to hear. I really love that. I mean, that subtle moment. I really also like Fear Fights Me in Shadow Box Rate. Oh, my gosh, Sweetie. Fear Fights Me in Shadow Fox raises, it was really hard for me to say that, but I really love that line too. There were really creative ebbs and flows of this piece. And the lines, I think, I mean, the concept of it was obviously really well done, and the people, various people commented on the concept of it. But I think it's a little subtle too, the lines and the metaphor that for me were definitely one of the highlights. Really well done.
Somebody worked with me on that today, so thank you.
Someone what?
Somebody helped show me this. I tried working in that frame like you showed me this afternoon. So I appreciate that.
Look at that. I didn't even. Yeah, good job. Good.
Sweet's clever like that. And before you run, Sweet, you push your show for Thursday?
I don't know what I'm doing Thursday, even though it's like Tuesday. Isn't that, I'm so unorganized, like Sky. Sky is super organized, and I am like, I got another 20 hours. I don't know, to be honest with you.
Okay. It's unhealthy. It's really an unhealthy attribute. I know it sounds wonderful to be organized, but it's really an unhealthy attribute.
No, this is really bad to be this unorganized, but I have had so many finger issues that the thought of typing something up is like, oh, God, I got to type again. But I'm getting there, so I will probably put that up tomorrow morning first thing. But I'm thinking I don't know yet. He put up
no pressure. No pressure. Surprises. That's cool.
That's generally what I do anyway.
Tomorrow at 10 or 11.
You'll be surprised.
You'll be surprised at the time also?
Probably.
Okay, then.
Whenever it gets there.
Just be showing up tomorrow night, and we don't know when or where. Or what?
There'll be a show tomorrow.
There will be a show.
There'll be a show. Maybe it'll be a surprise. Pick something for me on Thursday. Maybe Thursday night.
It's not tomorrow.
we're going to have
Thursday.
Fun.
There'll be a board up tomorrow about what we're going to do on Thursday. And it'll be fun because that's the kind of person I am. Or it'll be very depressing or very dark. Or it'll be fun, dark, and depressing. So let's see how that works.
Trifecta.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Well, you got to be careful. You put up a board, Sky might break it.
Oh, I know. But Sky will be gentle.
You're so funny.
She loves me. All right, guys. I'm going to go into the room of soaking my fingers and then having them gently.
Lovely word called debriefing.
Debriefing, yes. All right, I'll talk to you all later. Have fun.
Good night.
Great
show tonight.
Good night.
Moo.
Good night.
Moo. Bye, Hatter.
Let's throw Pee Wee up. We just lost a Sweet Pea, so now let's put Pee Wee up.
Okay. My mouse is very slow today. I like it's lagging something awful. Okay, Pee-wee is up. So, Sky, are you up for reading? Because my voice is crap.
Yes. I will warn you, I usually pre-read, so we'll see how that goes.
But, you've been doing excellent.
I'm sorry, Sky. I actually thought he had a SoundCloud.
No. It's good. But it does have the F-bomb in here, and what am I doing with that?
With what?
The F-bomb, and what am I doing with that?
There's an F-bomb in here? No, you don't say the F-bomb. You can say stinking.
Okay. Stinking?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We could do the SpongeBob giggle, like the flipper thing right in the middle. No, I won't do that. My Chair by Pee Wee Kusan. Night sky sparkles, invisible solid, awful sunrise, assault eyes. Deep down, filth stays hidden, count sheep, mangy flea ridden. Staring down another barrel day, blank clown, how did it get this way? Adjust shades, burning retina protection, manifesto made inflammatory infection, needle veins, rocket ship to moon, mirror's pain comes crashing soon, straight jacket made of smooth lines, gelatin packet, congealing thoughts in mind. Swirling round, rushing through the air, coming down, psychosis, from my chair. End quote.
Wow. Somehow that reminded me a little of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and I don't know why. It's some beautiful imagery. And waking up, he's doing a little wake and bake there, I guess they call that. That's trying to dull the ache. And Better Living by Chemistry, really, really good piece. And we all struggle with, I guess, reality and perceptions, and you know, people want to tell us what's real and what isn't too, and that's one of the reasons why I loved the quote so much, because you know, you can't really judge what Poe was dealing with when he even said what he said, and you know, the fact that he had to retreat to his what people judged as insanity, you know. Well, from his point of view, it wasn't insane, you know. I really, you know, enjoyed that, and I think you captured that thought very well. Thank you, Pee-wee. I know you've got something to say about this one, Pretty Bird.
I do. You know, there's so many ways to look at this. There's all the things that happened in the chair. For me, it's very much, it reminds me of, I don't know if you guys have ever actually seen the Pink Floyd film The Wall, but
yes.
When it's going to get to the comfortably numb section, he's sitting there in the chair and it's kind of all comatose and they have to like give him all the like adrenaline shots and whatnot. It's reminding me of that kind of existence where,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's, you just kind of exist. Your whole life is in that chair, and to deal with the pain, whether it's physical or emotional or whatever, you know, you get high, you crash, you get high, you crash, you get high, you crash, you sit there and you get rid of the pain and then it stabs you again. You get rid of the pain and it stabs you again. And you wonder how it gets this way. But my favorite part of this poem, because I'm not twisted, it's fine, is gelatin packet congealing thoughts in my mind. Because having dissected brains, it is very gelatinous and disgusting. And I love how it brings to mind a jello mold of frozen in time with thoughts just stuck there like snapshots of hell. And I absolutely love that something like gelatin and congealing thoughts just really made that a wonderfully three-dimensional kind of visceral existence. So that was awesome.
We're from that era where they suspended the fruit in the jello.
So nasty.
Look, there's a grape. Oh, my God. Sky, you did a great job reading that cold. Can you comment first? I want to say Sweepy now. It's Pee-wee.
Yeah, I know. Pretty Bird's always pushing me out of my comfort zone and making me work on my confidence. I'm not Sweepy. Pretty Bird. No, I'm
so you're
Pretty
fabulous.
Bird, right?
You said, I think you said Pretty Bird. Who knows? We're fine. I'm fine. You can call whatever you want.
That's
just calling anybody by their own names and it's catching. This I thought was cool. And then, once I got into the rhythm of it, like once I realized the rhythm he was having halfway through, I think it was a little bit before halfway through, I started realizing the rhythm of time that he was keeping. And then I was like, let's just do it. Who cares if I mess up a word? But when I got really into it, it really was fast flowing. I really liked that about it. And then towards like the final couple stanzas, you know, as a reader, I really enjoyed the fast pace and the language that went with it. When he said a manifesto made inflammatory infection, it was kind of like you were being twirled around on a you know, one of those twirling seats, and you kind of didn't know where. It's like you didn't have time to focus on one thing, and you were twirling and consuming what he was saying all at once. And I think that mimics what he was also trying to present in the topic. So I thought that was cool how it did that. I don't know if what I said just made sense, but it made sense to me. But that's, yeah, really well done.
It's your reality.
It's my reality.
Excellent comment, though. Yes, I totally can see what you're saying, Sky. And Hatter, you get the last word.
Yeah, who mentioned Pink Floyd? Was it Pretty Bird?
Pretty Bird did, yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
May I ask what brought that on? What gave you that?
Comfortably numb. She said specifically what it was. She saw
I mean, in the poem.
in the poem? Where
the whole concept of sitting in a chair and getting high and the whole entire thing just reminds me of the opening part of Comfortably Numb before they, you know, pump him full of drugs to throw him on the stage, where he's just kind of practically comatose, just sitting there.
I found it remarkable that you brought it up, because Syd Barrett was the original. He created the group, and he went a little nuts and disappeared, and they didn't know what happened to him.
Yes.
And a lot of the songs were written about him. Wish You Were Here, Shine On,
Crazy Diamond.
Be Crazy Diamond. There's a lot of songs they wrote for Syd Barrett. He just sort of disappeared. He couldn't handle the pressure of being famous.
Yeah.
So
I thought that was a great, great pair. Did you know that when you mentioned?
I knew they wrote a lot of songs for him, but I didn't know he actually went off the rails. That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. He was the original. He created the band. They felt bad because they had to eventually let him go.
Right.
Kick him out of his own band. That was a big dilemma for the band members. But yeah, I thought that was very interesting. And it was very well done.
Thank you, Heather. All right.
I've got Heather on the board.
Okay. Did you bring one tonight, Pretty Bird?
No. Me and writing have not been friends for a very long time. I'm surprised I squeezed one out the other day. It was the first time in, like, months.
Everything in your catalog is a bird poem. Leave me alone.
So, Heather, you are up whenever you're ready.
Okay, a dream I do not dare remember. And those are my real eyes there, yeah. It goes like this. With every moment that passes, it becomes a dream I do not dare remember. Things tainted to hide the beauty that filled my life when you were here. Counting what brings the pain has no name, and still it haunts the dawn's first light. Between what seems to be real or not, I walk the path that leads me alone to cry out your name, then wheels me back to a place forgotten. Beware the shadows, for I frequent the halls of the brokenhearted, shuffling from room to room, whispering the words I heard you say. With every moment that passes, it becomes a dream I do not dare remember. Cha-ching.
I like that thought. I keep wanting to rewrite it, though. I dare not remember, and I do not dare, but, you know, I still love that thought, you know. You're flirting with those memories is what's driving you nuts. Wow. I like that a lot, Heather. That was really cool. Thank you.
Thank you. Cool.
What'd you think? Is he truly mad?
Yeah, I think this is like a bleeding heart one, though, you know. It's just, I love the drawing. And I don't know if I had said thank you for drawing that picture for me. I think I did, but you did a great job. You know what I'm talking about, I hope. You read a poem, and I said you need to draw this image that you wrote, and it was great.
Yeah. I do now.
Yeah, it was great. I think I may have said that's great, but I wanted to tell you to your... We can't really say face-to-face, right, but, you know. But this is wonderful. But I think the part that really struck me was the counting what brings the pain has no name, and still it haunts the dawn's first light. I do love that, but there was one now. It was the halls. It was the haunting halls line. And that whole section, I felt like, yeah, it was kind of crazy, but it was also kind of sad. Like, I just felt a melancholy in this, and I think that took over for me. And I think for that reason, too, it goes well with the poem, because Rack was talking about the poem and how he wrote it after his wife died and how it was a very emotional time. So I think that this fits perfectly, too, because... You know, we're seeing all these, like, anxiety-written or depression-written or, you know, maybe, like, you know, kind of maybe having a little bit of narcotic influence. Like, there's so many things that we've had I think this is the first one when I was kind of like, oh, it's kind of sad also. Really well done.
Maybe because it didn't rhyme.
I don't know. I just felt kind of like a melancholy. I think you could still rhyme and be sad. I don't know. It just struck me as like, I mean, it just struck me as a little melancholy. I don't know.
I can tap into that podium.
Yeah, I mean, I love that it has that. But for me, it was kind of like, oh, I feel kind of bad for the Joker.
You know?
How about you, Pretty Bird? What'd you think of Hatter's piece?
I think memories are a dangerous, dangerous thing because they keep us attached to places that, while they were fabulous, or could be fabulous because sometimes memories suck, you know, horribly, but it's the ones that we miss the most that we want to stay there and we want to linger in that place. But when we do, it makes every present moment feel less than, and we're almost split between the longing for what was and the existing in the now. And it's hard, especially when you're alone and everything is reminding you of somebody, even if that it's a new place and nothing is actually physically reminding you, everything still reminds you. And it's heartbreaking. It really, really is. And there's really no way, I think that closure is not the norm, you know, and that not every situation can have an ending punctuation mark because, in my experience, emotions don't work that way. And so it lingers. You could have the best goodbye you could ever possibly have, like romantic, happy ending movie goodbye, like a melancholy ending movie goodbye. The best thing ever, and still for the rest of your life, you might still just miss them. It's not going to take that away. And that's what this feels like. It feels like that longing, like there is an active void that is being kept open on purpose to be filled with those moments, with those memories.
Because it hurts.
But, yeah. But it'll hurt more if you can't even remember the happy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
Pretty much. It's a very personal thing. Every
yeah.
moment that passes.
Yeah.
It becomes a dream I do not dare remember.
And you do not want to get in equal measure.
Should be mentioned in how much, because I rhyme all the time. And I didn't have a problem. Usually when I start to write free, I'll resort, something will click in my head, rhyming, and I'll end up rhyming the poem. But this one didn't.
Yeah.
I got my podium on.
Well, you did good, Hatter. We have a recording for Jay left to play. And Sky, do you have a poem?
I'm settling in on one now. I will have one before the show. Sorry.
Well, Jay, you are the last of the last. And if you want to push your new time and place and topics, too.
That doesn't start till next month.
Okay.
But you have a show on Tuesday, so you can talk about that.
Yeah, so I have, on next week, on Tuesday, I will be on a team of voices, and I went really far ahead, so I have to look at my topic boards and figure out. It's this one. There's a lot of stuff, you know. We've got the time it rained for 2 million years. Yeah, that felt like a Simbachwah, which I thought was really cool. I don't even know. It's like the weirdest thing. They're huge. And then, of course, the Megalosaurus, which is like just huge animals. I love that period in time because we would die And they're just so huge animals. I don't know. I just love it. So you could write any of those things. You could watch a video. You don't have to get technical. You could write about Bambi for all I care. You know, it's really just watch it and see what it inspires you. I mean, we all got a poem about rain, right? Just bring a poem and bring a conversation. So you learn something in the video to say, oh, hey, guess what? Now I can pull this out of my random topic list, and that's what I like to do. So that's, I just like to be like, oh, hey, you know what? This blah, blah, blah. And people are like, why do you even know that? I don't know, but I do. That's fun for me. So, and when people teach me new things, I love that even more. So it's always good to have those. It's on 8 p.m. on Tuesday, next Tuesday on Team of Voices. And I'm still on a Poetic Slice. So, yes. If you would like access to the topic, just let me know. I am on a Thursday at 8, and if you're wondering what it is The Mandalorian Season 2, so Star Wars. Every first week of the month is Star Wars. So give me a PM, and I'll send you the prompts and the stuff to write about, and I'll be on at 8 on Thursday. Thank you.
Awesome. Did you want to go next, or did you want to close with Jay?
Oh, no.
She's still
busy. I still don't even have a poem. I don't even know. I don't even know what I'm doing.
Okay,
right
well,
now.
Then.
I'm just enjoying your time right now. I'm cooking my chicken.
Okay, I'm gonna talk out of my butt for 2 minutes before I play Jay. I already put him up on the board.
Awesome.
Just because that quote from that you used for Edgar Allan Poe came from an interview, a long-distance interview back in the day where they sent him a list of questions, and he wrote back 11 pages of answers. And one of the questions was, how did you deal with your wife's prolonged illness? She was, like, dying for a year, and then she'd be fine for, like, 3 years, and then she'd be dying for a year, then she'd be fine for a year, and that went on for a decade. And so that quote came from how he described his bouts of alcoholism. He would be drunk off his ass until he was sober and had to deal with the normal stuff, and then he would be drunk off his ass. So his insanity was his alcoholic tendencies because he couldn't deal with his dying wife. But he was fine when she was fine, so there is that. So it wasn't any actual mental illness. He was just, you know, drunk and in pain. So I kind of love that aspect of it because he's just tortured. Because I don't know about you, y'all, but I was talking to Rack about this earlier. All the depictions of Rack have him as a dark, broody, twisted soul, a lonely mind, somebody who is just outside of what was considered acceptable, you know? And the truth is, he lived every moment with all that he was as far as his emotions go. He was so in love with his wife that it tortured him every time she was ill. And I just find that to be lovely because it kind of doesn't fit with the normal, mundane descriptions and examples of Poe's broody darkness, you know? He was truly tortured by how much he loved.
Check out the movie I mentioned earlier on Netflix, The Blue Eye, because that's from his days in West Point, and they don't play him like that.
And I watched the whole thing like when it first came out.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's based on, yes, but a lot of these clandestine meetings, nobody knows what happened in any of that stuff. They pulled it out of their butt.
Okay. Good to know.
Some of the rock gut that they called booze back then too could easily tear your mind apart. So that would be he was basically an empath. He felt the pain of the ones around him.
Well, everybody feels. I take issue with how people throw out the word empath. Because there is a very big distinction between somebody who is good at reading people and empathizes with their emotions
and somebody who feels what somebody else is feeling without having to be told. They're on two completely different levels. One is all-consuming, and one is an extension of kindness, you know?
I think they balance out the universe for those who cannot feel.
I think everybody can feel. People just choose not to as their mind tries to keep them safe.
I'd like to think so.
But that's just my own warped sense of crap. Because, you know, I wouldn't
warped.
Call myself normal by any stress. Well, you know, warped, at least it's never boring. All right, so I have Jay up on the board, and now that I have said my little piece of poe trivia, and yes, I just looked it up to make sure, Rack, in the blue eye there, while a lot of the timeline is based on his life, there has never been anything about him hunting down serial killers. So the storyline of that is not at all true. But it's a wonderful show, and it's really interesting. And there's
awesome.
A lot of little twists in there. It's fabulous. Okay.
One of the documentaries or one of the interviews actually has the line from Wayne's poem where he's lamenting, you know, people think I'm mad, mad, mad. And I forget where that came from, but that was also from one of his one of the things on Poe as well.
Fascinating person. And I think what I find most fascinating is people's interpretations of him through his works. Okay, not for nothing. People of the time would judge poets by what they wrote, not just by who they were. And most people, there was no easy travel. You can go from here to there like you can now. It's not a day trip. It's months on a ship, and maybe you'll meet the guy, maybe you won't, you know? And they glean what they glean.
He was not well paid. I think he got $30 for the Raven, which later sold for like $17,000 or something like that.
Didn't Poe have an arch enemy that they constantly tore each other apart in columns and papers?
I think that actually was his publicist or someone that had something to do with him that was supposed to be his friend, Greenwald or something like that.
It was another poet.
Greenwald, yeah. They were associated. I think the guy had something to do with his writings. He's the one that wrote his obituary.
Thomas Dunn was started out as a friend, and they ended up being, you know, enemies. And then N.T. Willis becoming close friends. So, you know, human nature. I don't know what that crunching sound is. It's very loud.
I'm sorry. I put myself on mute because I wanted to say something, but
go ahead.
I forgot. No. So, go ahead. I want you to finish because it was about your comment. So that was me crunching. Sorry.
Okay. Well, it's just that people judged him by what he wrote. Well, he's twisted, but what's going on in his mind is coming out with this. Well, this is brilliant. You know, what does it say about who he is? And not for nothing, if people judged any one of us by any random poem, we would be crazy, lovelorn, depressed, all of these god-awful things sorry, my husband just got home from being away for a week. My dog's going crazy. So I wonder how much of how people saw him was based on the way he wrote, and how unfortunate is that, and how frustrating.
Right.
I mean, I would act out if everybody kept on calling me Broody, and I thought that I wasn't, you know?
Yeah.
So I find that possibility interesting.
Yeah. I don't remember which one it was, but one of the document, I think it might have been the one about unearthing the truth, buried alive, unearthing the truth. I think that was the one where they mentioned it starts out with him going, people think I'm mad, mad, mad. That was an interesting quote. And that kind of relates to my next topic too, because the embellishment and the embroidery. But, you know, that'll come up, that comes up. Anyways.
So that's what I wanted to loop back to.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say that that I took myself off of mute because I wanted to go, you actually circled back to it, but I wanted to go back to your comment because you said it is what people gleaned from it. And I thought that it was just a wonderful thought because I couldn't agree more because you don't really know. I mean, I don't have to reiterate what you just said because you went further into it, but that I really wanted to go back to what you said because it got kind of clipped, and I wanted to make sure that we explored that because I think that is so true. I mean, even like when you look at poets like Emily Dickinson, you know, her work wasn't even published till after, but then everybody had an opinion about her life. She was this, she was that, she was this. She wrote about death all the time. Well, there was a lot of death in that time. She had a lot of people die. Like, what do you expect? But there's so much more. Her writing, and when you start and you start to read, so I got a couple of new books last year or something, and they were the early letters from her, and the letters are so much different, you know, and but not different, but also very the tone of them. So you have to take that context in. And, you know, people just are, you know, she was a recluse. Okay, she didn't like people. Who does? Like, you know what I mean? Like also the time, too. Like there are so many things. You do not know. Like, bottling people up into what, to these things. I think what Pretty Bird said was just so true. That's all. I just wanted to support your comments.
I'm getting attacked by my dog.
My
husband walked in the room. She's going crazy. It's nuts. I apologize. She sounds like a gremlin. But, okay, you know, on that same token, Sky, how many times have any of us or all of us written anything and people assume we're going through it at this moment? And it could be something that we remembered from 10 years ago. It could be somebody else's something that we glean inspiration from. But the normal reaction for people is to assume that you're writing about something personal now. And it has that could be further from the truth for most things, you know?
Yeah.
Come on.
So,
AAP had lunch with Scaramouche.
And so it always... I find it a little bit insulting because I'm a moody biatch. I will admit it. I know who I am. I find it a little insulting when people that I don't know or barely know are all up in my inbox going, oh, my gosh, I'm going through that same thing, and we're kindred. What the hell are you talking about? Like, oh, this poem. Oh, yeah, no, that has nothing to do with me. But thanks for asking, you know, because it kind of means that people think to me that – you are incapable of true creativity, that you can't just touch on a feeling and then expound on that in a very honest way without having to tell every single detail of everything that ever happened to you. It's like not all poetry, and I purge, so I get it, but not all poetry or art of any kind has to do with the actual moment you are living, you know? But human nature reads it that way.
And I think you're right, too, when you – I'm sorry, Rex?
No, I was going to say, and Sky knows Sebastian, but go on.
Well, you know, and what you said, too, sometimes you have some truth, right? There might be a bit of truth of your experience in a poem, but then you're also
pulling from
somebody else's truth, and then from this truth, and from that different experience, or maybe something that you've seen or read on TV, and you're pulling in all these different things. And yeah, there might be a kernel or two of your own experience, but you're also taking an experience as a whole, and you're generating it together to have a different movement. And I think that's true also. You know, and then
can you imagine being judged for one of those pieces?
Yeah,
well,
so I
have the whole world think you're crazy because you wrote a piece about being crazy.
And And that's why partly what came up for my next topic, the embellishment. It's exactly it. You know, you're taking that little grain of truth and expanding on it or exaggerating it for the purposes of, you know, storytelling or whatever. And you know, every people that are reading it don't know fact from fiction.
I caught a fish. It was this big.
Yeah.
And there's a poet on here that I know, and they started writing at the bottom of their poem, "This is fiction," because all the comments that were coming in were like support comments, right? Yeah. Like, you know, you should reach out for help, or if you need someone to talk, like all support comments. So they started to write, "This is fiction." And I thought that was just, yeah, and I thought
I
that was unfortunate. And it's a certain you're sitting there and you're invested in this poem. And you don't say you. It's the speaker of the poem, the speaker in the poem. It's not the person who wrote it. It's the speaker in the poem. You don't know if it's them, a personal narrative, or not. So it's always the speaker in the poem. But when you're reading it and you're going through and you're investing yourself in this poem and this emotion, and then you read the last line, it's fiction. I think it's a disservice to the poem, because it's someone's truth. It may not be that person.
It's a disservice
truth,
to the poem. It's a disservice
truth
to the poet. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
They felt
that they had to do that because of all, they were sick and tired of seeing all those comments. And I'm like,
yep.
I wish you didn't do that. But I also understand.
I wish you could turn comments off for particular poems, because that would be nice. Read it. I don't care. I don't want to know. Shut up. You know?
I had to put shame. Don't ruin my illusion.
Reality has no place in my fantasy. Don't ruin my illusion.
I'm telling you.
Well, it's
you.
A truth. It's someone's it's truth. And you read
everyone on the internet is naked. Everyone on the internet is naked and 40-year-old truckers.
Or something.
But
you're absolutely right, Sky. When we write a poem, a story, paint a picture, whatever it is, once it is done, it no longer belongs to us. It belongs to everybody that it touches. Everybody who reads it will get something else. It will touch them in a way that only it may only touch the person reading it, because it's familiar to them in ways that we couldn't imagine, even if we pulled it out of our butt. And that is the magic of poetry. To have disclaimers on there is unfortunate, because people are presumptuous and they're like, well, since I use my writing platform as a journal for all my business, that everybody must do that. So I'm just going to help them where I can. I'm like, I don't need your help. I'm not actually crazy. But thank you. You know?
Well, you did call it My Life in 10 Words. So, you know.
No, I said life in 10 words was everybody's universal life, but we're okay. It's funny, because I'm writing this book. Well, eventually I'll finish it, it is vile. I'm telling you right now, it is vile. It is vile, and it's so much fun to write. It is god-awful vile. And if I were to start posting my, like, little three-page chapters, like, chapter by chapter on here, people will think I was horribly abused. People will think I am demented and deranged. People will call the cops for a wellness check if they don't hear from me for 3 days. I swear to God they will, because it is that unfortunate. But I think it's a fabulous story. I think that it is unfortunate that out there, it's not like these things don't happen. It's just they usually don't happen all at once to some poor kid. But it is vile, and I know it is vile, and I am absolutely having the best time writing it. It's not even funny. But it's not something that I can post here simply because people suck.
And that's the power of creation, right?
See, I think so.
It's about all these scary movies that people go out to see. You don't say, oh, the person who directed this is crazy. They directed a film.
Oh, you can't do it.
Unless it's Quentin Tarantino.
I mean, people have said all kinds of things about Stephen King, because the way he is brilliant, you know, he's a little twisted, and it's fabulous. I absolutely love a mind that can do that. But in this kind of interwoven social society of online anonymity, people think that they have the right to talk shit and that they can sit there and judge all your crap and be all whatever, and they are unkind, and they call it being helpful. And it's an unfortunate thing. So the only person who has ever heard any of it is Rex. And he will sit there silently while I read 100 pages of whatever it is, and he's fabulous about it. But I can't put it here, so I'm going to wait till it's done, and we're going to see whatever comes of it. It is a fast-moving, unfortunately descriptive. What?
I said, and send it to Sky. But I'm going to publish it. Send it to Sky.
You won't look at me the same way again. I swear you wouldn't. It's fine. But it's bad. I'm not exaggerating. This is not for effect. It is vile. But it's fabulously vile. It serves a purpose. But, yeah. So poor Jay has been on the board now for 10 minutes. So what'd you say?
Put the disclaimer at the top of the poem.
No, I'm a firm believer. There should be no a disclaimer that it is an adult. Okay, never mind. Okay, I'm with you, Jay. I understand what you're saying.
I'm telling you.
I know, it was a completely different.
So, you know, that took a turn. My bad. I thought that's what happens when I pull things out of thin air. Things go sideways. But Jay is up on the board. So, now you finish picking a poem, and I will play him right now. Here we go.
The Sanity of a Monster by JCA. Sailing in the obsidian skull of Isis. Artist sketches the velvet faces of women, floating in the colored snapshots in his head, hand strokes staining the notebook like crimson on the shoulders, skin tone, the lipstick, the eyelashes, signed with a date in a city. Chessboard in the oil-slick streets. Mary, Yvonne, Carla, or Anne? Prostitutes, the homeless, or addicts. Dumpsters, rivers, basements, woods. 35 years. Planting bodies like the sun-tipped tulips in a green thumb garden bed. Jane Doe, flopped from the back seat to the splash. Old black water and the Mississippi mud. Paintbrush your body. Artist captures the cheekbones. What bevels as normal when your sanity drinks the scarlet Moscato of death? Yes. Little's hands grip the thirst of feminine necks. 35 years. Did you hear me? 35 years. Heartbeats are heartbeats. Breaths are breaths. Women are daughters, sisters, mothers. Stroll in Little's brain like the system. They are objects, numbers, Janes. Drawing the women, artist is the killer. Every pound of flesh lived in his sanity, drawn to the details. 60 confirmed.
Wow. As you know, it's kind of unfair. I thought you were going to bring a Joker poem. And I should never have thought to put you in that box, Jay. I like this Jack the Ripper I'm imagining. The idea of it is brilliant. And, you and your talk true insanity and not cartoon exaggeration. Wow. It's both shocking and dark at the same time. I mean, the fact that it's based on reality is what's really mind-numbing, you know. It's the idea of the quote about, you know, what's insanity and what isn't to heart. You know, did he live in reality? What was his reality? Yeah, this is great. Thank you, Jay. Sorry I kept you waiting. good to see you, man. Sky, can you comment for Jay?
Yeah, Jay, thanks. All I need more in my life is to think about this guy looming around the corner. I think this is one of your best. I don't appreciate real serial killers as much as other people, because I kind of like, why are we focusing on them? We should focus on the victims. But I have to say, despite that view, I thought this was the best one you've ever done. I love it, because you also, in turn, talk about the victims. A lot of ones that I see are very focused on the culprit and not a lot on the victims. But you, about halfway through, you really drive that home. When you go down, first of all, the read was great. When you say your pauses were brilliant when you were reading. I really enjoyed them. This line, this was my favorite line out of this whole thing. The planting bodies like the sun-tipped tulips in a green thumb garden bed. I thought that was brilliant. I also like the Moscato of Death. And then when you go into talking about the Jane Doe's and in the system, like these people have names and their identity is wiped. When they can't figure out, they can't crack the case, they're unidentifiable, and they have no restitution. Exactly what you said, they are objects, numbers, James. That is how he perceives them in his head, and that's what they are in the system when they can't figure out who they are, and they're the whole family that never get closure. And I thought the way that you brought that in, it's fabulous. And I think that when people write serial killers, like, it's fun to go crazy, I think, in fiction. When you start getting real, I start to get a little antsy. But the way that you actually contributed the poem, most of it, to the victims and what that is also, and that internalizing that process of the killer and the society, I just thought it was great. Really well done. End comment.
Thank you, Sky. Hatter, can you comment for Jay?
Yeah, I like the way you did mention it already, but the way that the women or individuals were insignificant at certain times in history, being that there was no census, there was no people disappeared and nobody knew what happened to them. Is my point. What was that? When they're just a number. Women are her daughters and sisters. Yeah. Yeah, JCA, he writes intensely. I think the way he read it also was very good. Thanks, JC.
Great comment, Hatter. And Pretty Bird.
I'm going to start by reading you his author's notes, or paraphrasing his author's notes. Sam Little was the most prolific serial killer in U.S. history. He was active from 1970 to 2005. He only died 3 years ago in 2020 and confessed to killing 93 women, but has only been connected to 60 so far. And they connected them to him because he drew pictures of his victims, which happened to match open cases. So, you know, I guess he was an artist on the side. Who knows? But knowing that really kind of puts a very concrete image on artist sketches, the velvet faces of women floating the colored snapshots in his head. I really love that. I mean, it the guy is obviously twisted, that his way of reliving things.
No more. It's all the little slits of I'm sorry. The ones who bore gossamer gowns of gloom, despite
guy.
The vile teeth that tucked. Oh, I'm sorry. Ah! I'm sorry. I was pre-reading my own, right, because I have so much anxiety, and I thought to mute myself. I've never done that before. Okay. I love you guys. I'm so sorry. I pre-read my own work because I get a lot of anxiety reading live. I am so sorry. Wow.
Oh, got the sneak peek behind the scenes right there.
Please ignore the gal behind the curtain.
she's not the cow. That's Sweet Pea. And I don't know what I was talking about. Oh, this is the artist on the side. I love how he read this. I love how he wrote this, where he gives us a little slightly romanticized velvet faces of women that gets all pissed the hell off. But did you hear? He was 35 years he did this nonsense, which I absolutely love. Love, 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 love. I love how he names them for all those that don't have names. I love how he kind of chronicles the kind of haphazard way he picked his people, you know, where it's all over the place. It's like, I don't know that they ever would have caught him if he wasn't an idiot, because he was all over the place. He wasn't like, let me get this, have one calling card, you know, and at least they could put, you know, at least they could put two-thirds of those cases to rest. What?
What part of the country was he in?
He was across different state lines. So that was part of the reason why it was hard to figure out that it was even the same person doing the killings.
Yeah, but he didn't go to every state. I'm just saying it's Midwest, East Coast, West Coast.
Don't know. It's not in the blurb.
Okay. Thank you.
But I could look it up. Give me a second. Talk amongst yourselves for half a second.
I think we talked about him because the picture's familiar. I think Grassman had
I feel like we could just start yelling lemon ices and it will be fine.
Meatball.
Oh, my God.
Fun. Look at the fun.
Is that it? Is that it?
19 different states.
Oh, there you go. So, all over the damn place.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Wow.
So he was active for 30-some-odd years.
Yeah.
And
just died 3 years ago.
The evil in this world.
So you know, you got your gallery collection of like Warhol, and then you got your Sam. What was his last name?
Little.
I think that would trump, like, you know, I got a Picasso, I got a Sam Little. Holy crap!
That's crazy.
That's like you got a painting of a murder victim, done by the murderer himself.
That's horrible. But I bet you it'll fetch a pretty penny in this warped society.
That's where I was going with that, yeah. Because there are the macabre people that are like, you know, oh, I want that.
Did you pick one, Sky?
Yeah.
I had it there. Yeah. Didn't you hear me pre-read?
Well, I didn't know if you settled on it. You know. Put it on
that's
the board.
All you get. That's all you get is a pre-read in the middle of the comment. That's all you have tonight. Yes, I have it.
Oh, here it is.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody for calling.
Oh, my gosh.
You have the floor, if you like.
Oh, thank you. All right. Sorry, again. All right, this is... I just dropped this poem. This is the one I got. So I don't know. It is what it is. But this is that despite the rot in my chest, I still wanted you to love dead things. By Sky Darko.
Well, that's fabulous.
When deaf tongues could sing no more, all the little slits of I'm sorry, the ones that bore gossamer gowns of blame, despite the filed teeth that tucked themselves in the creases of your palms.
I could finally see with clarity the stores of horror that breeded themselves in your shadow. You, the self-proclaimed God, like a minotaur ramming coined phrases down insecure lungs, bricks of molasses that poison. And is it cliche to say, despite the rot of organic matter dying in my chest, I still wanted you to love dead things. Dead things, things that those swallowed words left shattered, exposed to chthonic skeletons with diamond eyes and hammered nails reaching out from the dark. I did not resist shallow tides that tugged, simpered smiles, for I've been drowning in a spit of daddy's bile my whole life, a man with a unique appetite for punishment. So you see, when you found me, I was already empty of beautiful things. I once had them, you know, like dressed-up dreams, before time made them die, those little deaths that spoil the soul. And like a wounded animal, cold in separating rooms, I was no martyr, just a sorry life of collected tunes that learned not to waste tears on silent, sentimental things, like kindness. But when tongues could sing no more, all the phonetics bruised into palate like a wallpaper of daffodils, toxins, conditioning, making me believe I needed you to love all those dead things I had become. When at last I, too, was swallowed by the black, I finally saw behind the visard you called love. And poem. Not really insane, but that's what I picked. So that's what you get. Right? Sorry.
I mean, to me, it's kind of like the beginnings of insanity, because you know the idea that you flirt with in what I'm hearing of you know the person doing what he's doing, but you know it's not an intentional thing. It's just the way that he tries to show his love and you know, he's oblivious to the fact that he's killing you. You know, it's just, you know, this is what love looks like to him, and that's what's making you crazy. You know, it's a relatable thought in a lot of ways, but you know, at the same time, it's like from the other side, it's like, you know, you almost want to defend the idiot and say, you know, well, if I knew I was hurting you, I wouldn't be doing it. And from your side, you're like, well, how can you not know that you're hurting me? You know, so that's absolutely crazy. You're both arguing, you know, what appears to be an empirical point. It's like, how can you not? How can you not? Well, here's how. A, B, C. You know, I mean, I get that. And you know, it is the kind of thing that'll make anybody nuts. It really is. And I think the sad part of it is it all comes down to intentions. You know, you love someone, and it's hard to look at them and think that this person is going to hurt you. And there they are, and they're killing you. And on the flip side of that, if they knew they were killing you, it'd be like, oh, well, that's killing me. So you know, that vicious cycle right there is really enough to make anyone. I love that. I thought this was great. Thank you, Scott. And I'll probably wait.
Thank you, Rick.
Pretty Bird, what'd you say?
You know, on what you said, the unfortunate truth is that people judge other people's feelings by what they themselves feel. It has nothing to do with reality, has nothing to do with the truth, has nothing to do with how other people experienced whatever emotion that taught them to define things. So it's not a cycle. It's not that, you know, you would think that if they loved you, they couldn't stand to see you in pain, but that's not their truth necessarily. That's your truth that you assume is their truth because that's what you think love should be because that's how you define it. But nobody ever has these conversations. I do because I'm an idiot. I mean, I exhaust people with my conversation. But most people don't discuss what love means to them. What are their foundation rules for how to love somebody and the expectations of the other person in that same definition? Nobody sits down and has these discussions. They just realize they're on different pages, but everybody's always crying. the idiot that I am, laid down ground rules for every freaking thing, everything, all the time, always subject to change and open for discussion. Nothing's ever off the table, but I always have to know all the things. And I think the way that I'm anal that way has kept me steeped in loved reality and not in, did you call me lame?
Sane.
Oh, with an sane. I was like, gee, thanks. No, I don't think anything about irrational emotion, and all emotion is irrational, is sane. I don't think that the idea of forever, which I do believe in, is a sane thing to believe in. It goes against human nature. It doesn't mean I don't believe in it. So I wouldn't call myself sane. I just wanted to point out the unfortunateness that is why we hurt, and we always hurt because we have these expectations of other people that we never define for them. So they don't know that we expect them to be however we expect them to be, because that's how we are. And most people never realize that we treat people the way we want to be treated until we end up treating people the way they treat us. And that's just human nature. But most people just don't go around thinking about these things or understanding these things or caring about these things, because life is just life, and I'm the idiot that overthinks everything. So I just wanted to put that out there. But back to the poem, because I have an opinion on everything. A couple of whorehound lozenges, and apparently I'm just talking up a storm even though I can't breathe. It's fine. Your poem break me on so many levels. I kind of want to hate you, but I can't because they're so beautiful. And I say this in all honesty, and I don't say that about a lot of people. I'm not, believe it or not the biggest fan of poetry, says the poet, but whatever, it's true. I know I'm steeped in hypocrisy. It's fine. But here, where is it? Where is it? Oh, I just had it, and then I slid my, I scrolled my crap. Oh, so you see, when you found me, I was already empty of beautiful things. I once had them, you know, like dressed up dreams. And that speaks to me of whatever unfortunate childhood, whatever it is that kind of rapes the innocence from your soul. And it doesn't even have to be actual abuse. Like for me, it wasn't, you know, incessant beating. It was very much verbal. You've read My Stable Shut. It was very much, nobody wants to hear you sing, so I never sang again. I was 7 years old. It's very much that to me, where all the dreams that you have, where your parents tell you that you can be anything, you can do anything if you work towards it and whatever, and you believe it until they make you not believe it. Because if they don't believe it for you, how can you believe it for yourself? Most people aren't strong enough to overcome that without a wonderful support system that's, you know, that is elsewhere, you know, and it's sad that's how, you know, at different moments of our lives, we can identify ourselves by that hollow pit where dreams once lived, by all the things that we used to be that we're hoping are decaying in that void, to then yield fertilizer for new good things to grow at some point. And maybe you're giving me those seeds of love to fill that with something better than what. And your title, and again, when that title is in the actual piece, despite the rot in my chest, I still wanted you to love dead things. Like, you're almost pleading to be worthy of the word, of the affection. And it breaks my heart, because it is so hard to, and I get that it's a poem. We had that whole side thing of things don't have to be true. But in the reality of life, for anybody that isn't actually insane, it is a very difficult thing to verbalize in any concrete kind of way that you know you're broken, but take me as I am. Because it's as vulnerable as anybody can be. It opens you up for rejection, for proof that you're not good enough because you're so damaged, that everything horrible you see in yourself is reality. You open yourself up for that, just wanting to be loved. And this breaks me. And it's beautiful.
Thank you for the word. And like you said, it's an unfortunate thing when you have that, say, okay, that I'm not enough, but then that in turn, you know, puts your bar down also, not only to yourself, but to other relationships. And like, yeah, that's okay. You can treat me like that because I've been treated like that my whole life. And that's it, that mm-hmm. cycle, right, of violence and that cycle of, you know, that cycle. So, yeah, mm-hmm. thank you, pretty bird. Abuse, that's what I want.
You're welcome. Yeah. Well, you know, it's an unfortunate thing that when we get treated badly, it's like, well, there must be me. I mean, they can't be the asshole if people keep on treating me badly. I must deserve to be treated this way. And then it takes somebody treating you even more horribly than you've ever been treated to be like, you know what, fuck this. Oh, sorry, F-bomb. I know I don't deserve this one. And then you have to go and rethink everything else that maybe you may not have deserved. And that's where strength comes from. But you have to be beat down to nothing before your legs grow stronger. And I hate that's how it works, you know? Some people can learn a lesson with a little bit of pain, but I don't think that they learn it well enough not to make those mistakes again. The only time you affect real change and how you view yourself and how you let others treat you is when it guts you and you have to rebuild. And that's how armor comes to be, you know? The strongest people you will ever meet have known the most pain. Even if you don't know it, they have.
And then you got the other people on the outside looking in, going, the completely off base, saying, well, you must have done something for them to treat you like that. You know? Like if you come home from
school. Talk to those people?
Well, sometimes they're your own parents. You come home from school and you got into a fight in school and you know, well, what did you do? Well, why did he start a fight with you? You must have done something. You had to have done something.
Oh, that's crappy parenting right there.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Don't waste your tears on kindness.
Anyways.
Go ahead, Hatter.
So I guess. Go ahead, Hatter.
Yeah, to the poem, don't waste your tears. Was it, well, don't waste your tears on kindness? For the times
yeah,
have nothing left to
things
sing.
Like kindness.
It was, I was no martyr. It's just a story life of collected tunes that learn not to waste tears on silent, sentimental things like kindness.
You know, and I don't know how many times I've heard people crying their sorrowful tears for something somebody did to them when, in fact, they're guilty of the same thing. You just hit somebody else. Yeah. And you go on. And it's something
but
they don't teach you.
When they don't know the intention, they don't ever see it as themselves.
Yeah, I think
people very quickly
everybody
judge others without
it.
Ever seeing their own faults.
Yeah. I guess they should teach you how to deal with it.
But so that and that's true. That's you have a truth too, and that stanza it centers around what is your normal, right? You learn how to compartmentalize, right? So you can compartmentalize. Oh, well, I'm not going to cry over this, or I'm not going to cry over that. I'm not going to cry over that, and then maybe you might say something to somebody, and they're like, how could you have a conversation like this on this level and not become emotional? Well, I compartmentalize it, right? You separate things so that they're so far attached from you that you're not, it's not harming you, right? So that's the idea of, you know, there is no kindness and that's just my expectation now. That's, you know, that's what centers around that stanza, you know.
Good point.
But you're also interpreting their intentions when you get hurt like that too, thinking you could be off base about what they were trying to say, and that's the sad part because they don't know how to express themselves, you know, correctly or intelligibly, and you know you're taking it the wrong way. That's not how they meant it. How many times have you heard that's not what I meant, you know.
It's like when he said you don't understand. You just don't understand what I feel. You know, come on, everybody goes through that.
Well, it's not about what you say, right? It's about how the person interprets it. So,
Well, I'm a big proponent of say what you mean and clarify, because so many people use different inflections and different verbiage to mean different things. Like if I look at you and I'm laughing and I say I hate you, you know I'm full of crap. But if I'm on the phone and you're not laughing out loud, I don't know that. And if we were having a weird conversation, I could very well think that think that somebody hates me. And I'd be like, well, fuck you then. Oh, God, don't mean that F-bomb. I am so sorry. And because our unfortunate histories trigger every time anything feels slightly familiar, even if it has nothing to do with what's actually happening. It's unfortunate the way our psyche wants to save our lives, you know? It puts up its dukes and gets in defensive mode before we even have a chance to figure out for ourselves what they meant. That comes after the fact, because our mind is very good at wanting to protect our heart once it's been hurt.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. It is. And it also puts distance in between us and our emotions, which makes us seem a little off to people. Like we're very most people don't notice, but then we don't trust anybody because then they think that's who we are, and what kind of an idiot thinks that's the real me, and it's horrible. It is a very lonely existence to live behind the facades. Everybody has different facets. You're a different person at work than you are at your parents' house, than you are with your friends. That's just the way it is. Different levels of relaxation, different tasks, whatever. But on an emotional level, when we have to just play nice for the sake of playing nice because it just makes for an easier day, everybody that takes us, takes that as our truth, for me, it makes me not trust them, because how could they, for 2 seconds, think that me being of no substance is a good enough person? You know what I mean? It's just a very odd thing, the way your mind wants to interpret how people react to your fake self.
Well, you remember when you first started with
that idea of attachment. Sorry, Hatter. That was my only thing on my
Hatter.
That idea of that. Yeah. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying that do you remember the transition or the faults of when we were just learning emails and texts and messages and stuff? I mean, we knew two things, face-to-face or not. Maybe on the phone is a little different. But now the inflection of language, facial expressions, how you say things, you can't get away with it in an email or message without being taken wrong. I've seen relationships blow
up
because of humor. Yeah, he meant it to be funny.
I got into a fight just a couple of weeks ago with somebody I've known forever. And I was like, well, you said this. And you didn't put JK, you didn't put any of these whatever. And I know you well enough to know that sometimes you're kind of an ass, you know. So this is how I read this. But I always ask, I said, I'm taking it like this. Am I wrong? Because people always read me wrong. People read me like I'm snarky all the gosh darn time, like snarky and me, not snarky, ha-ha, funny. And I'm just like, whatever. If that's who you think I am, you and I can't be friends. I'm so sorry. I was like, if you think I would actually say this nonsense to you, then I don't need to know you anymore. I have no patience. Goodbye. Because I learned a long time ago that if I have to keep on explaining why I am the way I am and how I did, then I can't be bothered, you know? I enjoy a phone call. I enjoy being able to hear the inflections and the subtleties and the nuances, because there is a way to talk to somebody. And I can be as innocent as can be, but, you know, sometimes that's what flirting looks like, depending on how you say it and where you drop your voice. Or that's what happy looks like versus sad, just in how you speak. And so me and texting, I'm not a fan. And I have parentheses everywhere, disclaimers under everything, just to make sure that I'm not misinterpreted, because it happens so often. So I'm right there with you, Hatter. I think that it's so easy for everybody to live behind a screen that people forget how to actually speak, because in that anonymity, even if you know the person, you there's an empowerment to be your worst self. And I don't know why people do that. People in texts and emails and chats are much more just crass and vulgar and mean and in your face than they would ever be in person. And I don't know why that is. I mean, I'm kind of brazen, but I'm brazen in real life, so I am who I am. But most people can get really, really nosy and nasty, and it's unpleasant. And they're like, but I'm the nicest person. That's not what I see.
It's like slamming the phone down without having to do it.
What?
That ain't happening anymore.
Yeah, I miss that. I need a hard hang up, but I need some kind of hardware that I can slam on a table or hang up on somebody, because I miss that satisfaction, that half a second that I have to pull the phone away to hang it up with a click that's silent is not satisfying.
Well, that was what was good about the old phones that you couldn't destroy. They were made like tanks. It was big black ones. Man.
They were murder weapons.
The little bell on the inside vibrating when the receiver comes down on the body, on the frame of the thing, that ping.
Well,
anyways,
it is 12:19, so we are after time, Rack. So it was an excellent show, a fabulous conversation.
That brings the evening to a close. I'd like to thank everybody that hung out, that wrote for me, that actually absorbed and had fun and just spent the time. It's always great to talk about these things, and hopefully you get a lot of comments on the poems that you offered and enjoyed the conversation. At the end of the month, we've got a new topic coming up on the show. I'm like 3 weeks ahead, so I don't know when it's going to actually show up in writing, but the idea is going to be embroidery. What we were talking about. So embroidery, those embellishments of a lot of the feelings that we're talking about in the fact versus fiction and us being poets kind of a thought. So that'll be way down the road, well after Shutter Button and storyboards. So have fun and have a good night, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just as a quick aside, JCA posted some of Little's drawings of the women on the board. So if you want to take a look at that, it's really kind of creepy. All right. So good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Good night.